in my case and in Michelle and your grandson's case, we were born with an AVM, an arteriovenous malformation, right? And so your grandson can know that there's at least one person out there, but millions actually, that know what he's going through, and he's not alone. And he got a bonus round, and I expect him to do something with it.
Welcome to another episode of Relentlessly Resilient, where real people share real life experiences and the tools they've developed to move forward and live their best life. We are presented by Minky Couture, the most amazing, softest, snuggliest blankets on the planet. You can find them at minkycouture.com or any of their 6 locations right here in Utah. I'm Jenny Taylor.
And I'm Michelle Scharf. Jenny, today we have somebody that I found through scrolling on TikTok.
Which is not a sentence I thought would come out of your mouth.
I know, it's kind of crazy. So for those of you that don't know, my grandson on December 7th had an incident happen.
A major medical incident.
A major medical incident. And when he was arrived at the first hospital, we were told he had a mass in his brain and he was needing to be life flighted.
How old again?
He's 10.
10.
He needed to be life flighted to Primary Children's Hospital. He was life flighted and we waited 6 hours until 1 o'clock in the morning. His parents got a call on their drive down to the hospital that this was urgent and that they needed to go in now. They might not be able to speak to their son because this mass was located in the area of communication. What we didn't know at the time is that it wasn't a mass. It was a tangle of arteries and veins that had created a blood clot and a subsequent rupture. So what he was actually dealing with was a hemorrhagic stroke.
Oh, my word.
So after learning about that, being the inquisitive person that I tend to be, I didn't know where to go for information. And online, it was all just very clinical.
Very medical, sure.
Yeah, it was medical. It was explaining what was happening, but it didn't explain to me, like, what does this mean for my grandson? So I got on TikTok, and I just started with hashtag AVM just to see what I would find. And I found a lot of stories. I couldn't believe how many, because we had also been told it's very rare. It's like 1 in 100,000 people end up with this condition. If you have it, oftentimes they will rupture between ages 10 and 30. So I was on the scroll and I stumbled onto this woman whose story was so fitting, I felt, for this program. Not only was she dealing with a rupture, but she was dealing with a lot of personal life issues at the time. And she also was very open about the subsequent conditions that she was left with after her incident. So I'd like to introduce you all to Christy Kelly. Christy, thank you for being willing to talk to me during those scary first weeks of my grandson's bout with AVM.
Of course. Hi. Hi, Jenny. Hi, Michelle. It's good to hear your voice again. Yeah, we had a pretty beautiful conversation once we talked on the phone, but even our messages through TikTok were, it's funny, I get messages from people all over the world, which surprises me to this day, the connection that a simple video can make. And I swear I get as much comfort from people reaching out to me for comfort as maybe they get the comfort from me. And I hope I'm explaining that.
I love that because sometimes we hear the downside of social media all the time. We hear, whether it's TikTok or a different app, how damaging it can be to young people or how we're disconnecting as the human race. When also there's this beautiful side, like you said, you can connect to people from around the world who are the 1 in 100,000 not likely to be in the same room. And look what a resource you can provide for each other. So tell me and the rest of our listeners, Christy, give us your story. Give us the background. You and Michelle now know probably more than you ever wished to know about AVM and these things. But I'll admit, this is brand new to me.
Yeah.
The acronym, the idea, the very concept of this is something I've never heard of.
Christy, go ahead and tell us about what AVM stands for. Go ahead and start with that.
Yeah, AVM is an arteriovenous malformation. Arterio is artery, venous is veins, and malformation is malformed. There's something messed up with the way the junction where arteries turn into veins and veins turn into arteries, that junction becomes a bit of a tangled mess. And how I've explained it to people is if your artery or your vein is a hose, it becomes like a kinked hose. And then pressure then begins to build up. And I'm going to throw out a lot of things, and I'll keep it as simple as possible. I don't like when people overcomplicate descriptions. Most of us have heard the word stroke. A health science degree, history of working in the health field, I knew what strokes were. You get a droopy side of your face, things like the signs of stroke. I'd never really understood what a hemorrhagic stroke was. And so in my case, and in Michelle and your grandson's case, we were born with an AVM. It's congenital. It's not necessarily genetic. And this is another thing I had to look into. What's the difference? It's not that there's a family history of it. I'm automatically going to get one. That's not necessarily how this happens. It's an absolute miracle that any of us even form into human beings as it is, with our cells multiplying in the womb. Some of those cells multiply a little sideways on us, and we have a malformation, right? So this AVM is now creating pressure. You can have AVM anywhere in your body, but the ones in your brain are the most deadly.
So when that pressure they're most is common in the brain and spinal cord, but I've looked into this. There is some incidences, and I found some online, where people had them in their face and some other locations.
So can I ask really quickly, if you're born with it, do you know you have it until or unless you have kind of a major medical episode, or any one of us could be a ticking time bomb until something happens?
I don't want to be alarmist, right?
Like, sure. And I'm not either. I'm just asking, like, were you aware at least of this condition prior to?
No.
Wow.
Okay.
No, it really truly is most often a ticking time bomb. It would be, you'd have to have a contrast MRI looking for it in your brain. And that's just
which
not,
we don't do as routine procedure.
Mm-mm.
Sure.
And in my case, and I believe in Michelle and your grandson's case, the AVM with the pressure built up, you can have a weakened side of your blood vessel. And so then the side of that blood vessel can balloon out to try to release some of that pressure. And that ballooning out of the side of the blood vessel is an aneurysm. And it can kind of be like a raspberry, just kind of balloons out on the side, right? But not all AVMs create an aneurysm, and not all aneurysms burst. And when an aneurysm bursts, that, if it's in your brain, becomes a hemorrhagic stroke, a brain bleed. So it's these layers of things, because I woke up in the hospital and they said, you had a stroke, you had an aneurysm, you have an AVM. I'm like, which one did I have? And it turns out it's all three in a certain order.
Right.
And so you can have an aneurysm. Many people are walking around with aneurysms in your brain, not to freak everybody out, but like, it's also not necessarily going to burst. You can absolutely live your healthy life. And so some people present some symptoms and some don't. Mine came on. I did everything by the rules. You know, they say if you take care of your vascular system, you know, don't smoke, don't drink, you know, exercise, blah, blah, blah. I drank water, ate salads, and ran. Like, I was a healthy person. I did all the things. And again, not to scare everyone, but I think what maybe your podcast gets around to, like the broadest term, is you cannot predict what's going to happen in your life. You can do everything right, and you're going to have something thrown in your way that is just going to knock you senseless off of your path that you've been going along, you know, building this life. And to bring it back to your theme here, it's like, how do you stay resilient when that happens? And then also on top of that, it's not just that I had an AVM. I was separated, going through a divorce during COVID, which was stressful enough for all of us. I was also not even just about the year anniversary of a dear loved one murdered.
Wow.
Still catching my breath, going to trials and sentencing for that case while going through all of this with no family, no blood family nearby, relying heavily on friends, family, ex-husband's family, like just figuring out life as it is, a newly single parent recovering from brain surgery, emergency brain surgery, and then a subsequent brain surgery a few months later. They told me a lot of times when you have an aneurysm rupture, sometimes it just obliterates itself. And I was waiting back to hear, did it obliterate itself? Because they were doing all these scans to see if there was anything left. And of course, they came back and they said, there's some of it left. And with every month that you go by without getting it removed, your increase of another rupture increases 6 to 8% or something like that. So during COVID, there were no hospital beds, and many hospitals didn't see, they saw this as elective surgery, not emergency surgery. And so I had a surgeon go to bat for me up in St. Louis, about 6 hours north of me, and say, this is an emergency surgery. And they called me 2 weeks before Christmas, and they said, we have a bed available on Christmas Eve. Can you do it? And I said, I'm in. No questions asked. Sign me up.
Wow.
So I spent my first Christmas without my son. And as I was in the pre-op waiting room, I got a text from my lawyer that said, congratulations, your divorce was just finalized.
Oh.
So it was a weird...
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. Yeah. It was a weird time.
You know, we talk about this a lot on the show. Like, none of our traumas happen in a silo. There's always some other challenges in our life that are happening simultaneously.
Yeah.
It's not like you're like, oh, here's this
one my isolated
hard,
thing.
Here's one hard thing to deal with. It's usually just something that happens and it just kind of piles up. And it's like, okay, you know, you just got to put one foot in front of the other and handle the most important things at a time.
I remember my mom asking me for that second brain surgery. She said, aren't you scared? I was like, what's there to be scared of? I've already, I was in such a place of peace. I was like, they're going to fix it. But they already did an amazing job. The luck lined up. You know, I've always joked I'm not lucky at gambling or lottery tickets. It's like, if someone's going to lose the bingo game or the lottery ticket scratch off or like going to a casino, it's me every single time. I've never won. But I've always said I will take luck in life than luck in gambling.
Right.
You know, I'll take it. And when I woke up in the hospital, the neurosurgeon just smiled the biggest smile. And he said, if I were you, I'd go buy a lottery ticket right now. We just don't know how you survived this.
Oh my gosh.
And that first one.
Tell our listeners a little bit about that story. You're in the middle of a divorce. Do I remember correctly, you're out doing yard work?
Yeah, I was just like picking up branches and, you know, doing the lightest of yard work. It was Saturday, you know, afternoon.
And you're a fairly active person, like you said. It's not like you lived a very sedentary life before
No. Run, play soccer. Like, in my 40s, I'm still playing soccer and running and jump on the trampoline with my son. Like, I love being active and outside and hiking and rock climbing and just anything. Get me outside and moving, and I'm the happiest person, right? And so, my son was up the street playing with a friend. He's 7 years old at the time, and beautiful Saturday afternoon. And I had, slight pressure come on right behind my right eye and right above it. If you feel on your eyebrow, close to the side of your eyebrow that's closer to your nose, there's a slight dent. It's like a sinus node right there. And that dent, I felt a lot of pressure. And I thought, this is odd. I've had one migraine in my entire life. It was in college, and it just leveled me. And I've never had a migraine since. But I have many friends that get migraines. And I started to think...
Was it hurting in your eye?
Yeah, it was kind of behind my eye. It was like a pressure pain.
Yeah, that's what my grandson was complaining about.
Yeah, it's a pressure pain. And I thought, this is odd, but okay, you know, I'll go inside. And I went inside, and it got worse really fast, like really fast. Some people with aneurysm burst, it's within 5 seconds, they're just on the floor. Mine took a couple of minutes. And it got worse and worse and worse to the point I laid on the floor and I grabbed my phone and I called my next door neighbor, and she didn't answer, but I left a voicemail apparently that was like saying her name, just, oh, hell, you know, I don't feel good. And she could hear it right away. And so she called back. I don't remember answering. I guess she said she and her husband ran over. By the time they came over, I was rolling around on the floor screaming in pain, make it stop, make it stop. So they called 911, and I began vomiting, which is a hallmark sign of aneurysm rupture. your brain, your skull is a vacuum. It's vacuum sealed, right? It's very pressure balanced in there. If that pressure gets out of balance, things are not good. And so your body tries to do things to fix that pressure change. And so a lot of people will begin projectile vomiting. And so that's what was happening with me. And I guess I really don't remember much at all. And so beyond waking up in the hospital at that point. So it was, I do need to sit down with her every year, my aneurysm anniversary. I call it my aneurysmary. And I call her and I message her and I say, thank you for saving my life. My son could have come home and seen his mom dead on the floor. And she and her husband saved my life 100% by calling 911. So the ambulance took me to the hospital. They did a scan and they saw it was a brain bleed. They didn't have a neurosurgeon on staff at the time, so they took me about a half hour south. Neurosurgeon was there. They got hold of my parents and my ex-husband, and because he still had, power of attorney. And so it was up to him to decide if they could do this surgery, which there are complications. It's not as, and I realize this now, it's not as simple as brain surgery to save her life, of course. If you decide to do brain surgery, and I didn't know any of this at the time, and the more I learn about this, Michelle, you'll learn as well, but AVMs aren't like a big artery or a big vein. It's microsurgery in many, many, many cases. And in a lot of people, it's inside the brain, which is the most dangerous place to go because you have to damage parts of the brain to get into where it is. I was very fortunate. Mine was on the surface of my brain, my right temporal lobe, right kind of behind my ear. And that's your vision center, which is, I can get into that later, but I lost a lot of my vision permanently. So they had to go in. It's not as simple, sure, cut her head open and stop the bleeding. She could be paralyzed the rest of her life. She could be, on a ventilator the rest of her life. There are so many complications that people in your life that have to make that decision about, what do we do? So to me, it sounded like a no-brainer. Of course you would drill a hole in my head and cut it open and stop the bleeding and sew it back up. But there's a lot of scary things that come along, risks that come along with that. And I am so fortunate that I came out of this talking to you right now like an absolutely normal human being. It's shocking to me every single day.
Talk to us a little bit about recovery. What did that look like?
Nature and our memories are good to us in a sense that I've got 3 years under my belt, so I can not remember a lot of the bad parts. My mom remembers the bad parts. I kind of wish they would have taken more pictures and videos so I could really understand how bad it was. I guess I came out of surgery just screaming when the pain medicine wears off. It's an excruciating pain. I remember that from my second surgery. I remember screaming and begging for painkillers. Oof. Women are tough. We go through childbirth. You learn the power of breathing your way through some excruciating pain and just figuring it out. But pain aside, I had my head was cut a huge C shape from my temple, above my temple, down to underneath my ear, just a whole right side of my head. They'd taken out like a plate of my skull. And multiple hours of surgery, 7, 8, 9, 10 hours. I don't even remember how long that is that they're in there. They sew you up, and my whole right head of my head was numb. I still have numb spots 3 years later. I mean, they're not just cutting through skin and bone. Right. There's layers of muscle that have to repair itself. Nerves, yeah. All the things. I'm a fast healer. I'm fortunate that I was starting from a good, healthy baseline. So within 2 months, I was at the track running.
Oh, wow.
Fast, but I was determined. I was begging them, how soon can I run? And they're like, slow down, maybe just walk. I'm like, nah, how can I, And so
what about your ability to understand and communicate? Had that been impacted at all?
So my communication center wasn't affected. My aneurysm was in my temporal lobe, my right temporal lobe, and that's my vision center. So my vision was the primary thing that was impacted. I have it's like, if you're going to go weird, let's go really weird. So I not only did have an AVM and a stroke and an aneurysm burst, but I can now only see out of the right half of each eye. So if there's a hemisphere, like a line right down the middle of your pupil, I can only see out of the right half of each eye. So I am in a state of dizziness, and my eyes never stop scanning. It's out of my control. And I have a huge blind spot on my left side. So I can't see out of the, I'm blind in the left half of each eye, if that helps even a little more. But it's extremely difficult to describe how it feels. But yeah, and then my communication, I was able to communicate really well. Memory, I still have memory issues, a lot of memory issues, long-term and short-term, and that's very common. It's like if the CPU of your computer just got, like, dropped off the roof of your house, like, it's going to piece it back together. It's not going to run exactly as efficient as it did before. So I have to rest my brain, my CPU, a lot, even to this day. I have to do a lot of resting to let it cool down, recover, and to work at a basic level. And I'm lucky. I'm one of the fortunate ones. Many people have communication issues, motor issues, things like that. But the vast majority of people that have reached out to me through TikTok have recovered amazingly well in just a couple of years' time. So that's the good news, is people that do get musculoskeletal issues, mobility issues, a lot of them, there's so much occupational therapy that can help with that. Even if they start off not communicating, Michelle, I can tell you more stories that could fit on this time with you right now of people that have messaged me in the middle of the night saying, what are we doing in the hospital with my husband, my son, my daughter, my wife, my sister, they can't talk, they can't recognize me. And within a month they're saying, oh, they're talking, they're laughing, they're moving, they're walking.
We haven't talked since my grandson had his second surgery right after we talked. Mm. And he came out and he's doing much better. That first surgery, when they brought him off the ventilator, he was not able to communicate it with us. His body was tremoring. He didn't have use of the right side of his body. It was quite frightening for all of us. But he's doing much better. He actually got released from the hospital yesterday. So he's on the mend, but he's got a long journey ahead of him. It was in his communication center. So he has got some issues to work out with that. And the other thing is, you know, there's some question as to whether he has vision in his eyes, at least peripherally. So,
yeah, and that's what they said that initially. For the first few months, all I heard was, he's got some peripheral vision loss. And it was always just said so casually to me, oh, peripheral vision loss, la, la, la. You know, and you're in the hospital and they do the vision test and over again, you know, let me know when you can see my hand. And I was just like, there it is. And they would just very casually say, there's some peripheral vision loss. And I think the most emotional I ever was during this entire process was 2 months after my aneurysm, when I went to an ophthalmologist and they did what's called a field vision test. They put your head in a box and they give you a clicker in your hand. And there are hundreds of these little pin lights. And then you have to stare straight ahead at a single red light to keep your focus forward. And you have to click this button, this clicker, every time you see a light up anywhere in your vision field, and they map it out. And I remember, and you hear it, you hear the lights, kink, kink. And I kept hearing them, and I kept saying, did we start? Did we start yet? Because I kept hearing the clicks. And I didn't
You're not
see
seeing
anything.
Oh my gosh.
And oh my God. And my throat just tightened up. And I was like, I'm ready. And they said, we're started. I said, okay. And I finally saw one. I kept seeing them on my right side, and I couldn't see anything on my left side or even in the middle. There's a lot I missed. And it's a long test. And you just, every kink I could hear but couldn't see, my heart just sunk into my stomach. And I was trying not to cry because I didn't want to blur my vision, because I just wanted to see. When we were finished, we go in the room, and a few minutes later, they come in and they say, well, you've got what's called homonymous hemianopsia. And I said, I don't know what that means. And they said, and they show me the vision test and they map it out. And they said, all these black spots are where you can't see. And all the light spots are where the lights went off and you could see them. And it was just a sea of black on the left side. And I fell completely apart crying. And so, I remember being horrible. I still get emotional and think about it. I have to go get an alarm in a month, and I don't want to do it, but I need to do it. It's horribly emotional. It is a real life proof reminder that I've lost something, and it's a grief process. It's an absolute grief process. And so that's how I've treated it, is to just grieve the loss. I mean, we learn how to grieve loss of life when we lose someone, and that takes years to get through. And I had a neighbor, and she really unlocked something for me that was so key in my healing with my vision loss. Her son was born blind in his left eye. And so she found that out when he was a baby, just tiny baby. And they told her that she said she fell apart the same way, just absolute. When like it's literal proof of it, right? You suspect something, but you don't know to what extent. And then you find out and they tell you, it hits you and it devastates you. And then she said, I had to allow myself to grieve the loss of a part of his life and the life that I wanted for him. And so she just kept telling me, this is a grief process. And I said, why am I so sad? Why am I so mad? Why am I so angry? I couldn't put my finger on it. It was changing every day how I felt about losing a part of myself, losing the ability to do things that I loved, losing the ability to be the mom that I wanted to be for my child, the ability to be the kind of worker that I wanted to be, to have the freedom to drive anywhere I wanted to go, to watch any movie and read any book that I am. And when she put it in terms of grief, it made sense. I didn't have to fight it anymore, because grief is part of being resilient, is accepting your circumstances. It's accepting part of that, right?
Yeah.
The sooner you can accept that someone or something is gone is when you can start.
Yeah, it's really the first step of resiliency.
Oh, man.
It's okay.
Yeah. I've listened to a few episodes of your podcast, and I know you started at least a few that I've listened to. You ask people what resilience is. And what I've come to learn is, there's a Benjamin Franklin quote. It says, those things that hurt instruct. And if you don't take these painful losses and events and see them as a means to learn, then you're wasting these terrible opportunities, these terrible things in your life. If you see them as terrible things that happened to you and poor me, one of the most beautiful, beautiful lessons in your life is sitting right in front of you and you're just walking all over it. Like accepting that circumstance, that's another quote. I hope I don't hit you with too many quotes, but there's a lot of words that have gotten me through this that just have helped clarify a lot of like what these mix of feelings are, right? When you go through things like a violent loss of a family member, the ending of a very long relationship, learning a new way of life that you didn't ask for. It was forced upon you, a new way of existing. It's acceptance is peace. Second you can accept it and you stop fighting it, you can start moving. You can start figuring out how to do this, how to do life. The people in my life or the people that have reached out to me in similar circumstances or in different circumstances, but just major circumstances that have them feel emotionally stuck and frustrated, are the people that refuse to accept their circumstances. They're just hoping life can get back to the way it was. And they're going to forever be disappointed, angry, resentful, and feel victimized.
Right. And that's what it is, right? It's being in that victim mentality. Like, this is happening to me. You know, poor me, or why is this happening to me? But not in a way of, how is this happening for me?
It's a gift. I've said it so many times. The best thing that ever happened to me was this aneurysm. be valid.
That's a bold statement.
That is.
That's a bold statement.
The best thing that ever happened to me was this aneurysm.
That's a bold statement.
That is.
That's a bold statement.
So what? Why is it? What were the nuggets that you walked away with? Or that you are still walking with?
I've always been a pretty empathetic person. I've been pretty good with that. But the level of empathy I have now, ballooned. It is massive.
I have chills right now. My grandson was very intuitive and very empathetic before, but he has now gone into this next level place with it. And he's 10.
It's indescribable.
Yeah.
It's indescribable. The level of peace that I sat in that year, the year after my aneurysm, was the most peaceful and happy I'd ever been in my life. Number one, I wasn't working a stressful corporate job. And I wasn't in a relationship that was hurtful to me. But, you know, all jokes aside, I was given the gift of time. You get to reframe the thing that happened. Did I lose my job or was I given the gift of time?
Yeah.
100 times over, I was given the gift of time. And if you ask any grown up that has maybe a certain amount of savings in the bank, you're like, okay, I have enough money. What would I love to have more? I just want more time. And I was given that gift. So I was so for it. I was heartbroken. I went back to work at my corporate job. And after a few months, my brain was literally after an hour or two, just shutting me down. I physically couldn't work. And so I took time off. I was determined to just get back to work and be a fighter. And I didn't realize how much recovery my brain needed to rest and heal. So I, you know, work gives you a year off of, not entirely paid leave, but I said, I'll take every day of it I can get. And they don't keep your job for you. You know, the job has to get done. So I came back and they said, well, your position's been filled. And I said, thank you. And that was it. I said, okay, that's a gift in itself. So it was a job that paid well. I loved the people I worked with, but I wasn't happy there. And so that in itself was a gift too. So I got to choose another job. And I'm going to get back to things that I gained. Why is the aneurysm a gift? Patience is the word I always use. Is when you lose your vision, you have to do everything a lot slower. You have to be extremely patient with yourself. I spent the first several months just knocking things over, bumping into things, losing things, not being able to drive. Oh, I guess I have to walk, and that takes time. And you just go, well, I guess I can't do that anymore. I can be mad about it. Or I can find a way to go, oh, I don't have to drive. I get to walk. It's beautiful outside. Right? You get to flip that. And also, I mean, my brain and body and my son were all learning how to deal with this vision loss, my very limited vision and the amount of rest that I needed. So I had to figure out, I could be mad about this or I can be patient and kind to myself. I would have been patient and kind to if my mom lost her vision and staying with me, you know, or a friend. So why wasn't I being that way to myself? So I just thought, okay, I'm going to be nice to this lovely half-blind lady living in my body. I'm going to have to be nice to her. She doesn't want to be here. She didn't ask for this, but gosh, she could really use some patience and kindness right now. And so that's kind of how I treated myself as like,
okay,
a
I love, I love this. I love this. I love this. I love this because we sometimes are not naturally willing to be empathetic and compassionate and kind and considerate of ourselves the way we would if it were a stranger on the streets, let alone a friend or a sister. I had similar thoughts when my husband died and people kept bringing us food for dinner and I felt so guilty, like I should be able to cook for my own family and everyone's been so helpful. And I remember thinking, wait a second, if my neighbor's husband died leaving a bunch of little kids at home, I'd probably show up on the door with dinner. I'd probably say, hey, can I bring you dinner? And being able to step away from yourself in order to give compassion to yourself is huge. So I appreciate you sharing that because I think sometimes we overlook that. We talk about being kind, being mm-hmm. compassionate, being empathetic. Yeah. What if the empathy is to yourself?
Yeah.
We don't do that naturally very well.
I talk about this a lot, actually, in some of my coaching. We need to learn how to extend grace to ourselves. We'll mm-hmm. so quickly extend it to anybody around us. But oftentimes, the first person we need to extend it to is ourselves.
Oh, and I have not mastered this in any way. By the way, this is continually something I have to work on. It is, thank God for good therapists. Thank God for good friends and coworkers that really remind me that I need to be very compassionate and kind and patient with myself. So my goal is to be that way the vast majority of the time. Again, this all takes time and practice. But yes, it's once I realized anger, I'm in a support group on Facebook for people with this type of vision loss. And there's a pretty clear line down the middle of the people in this group, the people that have said, you know what? I've accepted this. Here's what I'm doing with it. I'm learning, I'm growing from it. You see that kind of more positive spin on it. And then the other half are the people that are just harboring anger about the situation and toward themselves and the situation. And I had an angry period. It was not pretty. I'm thoroughly embarrassed by some of the rage episodes that people in my life had to witness. And I remember people saying, "Are you so mad?"
You need to extend yourself grace for that too. You know, it's part of that first part of resiliency of claiming this is the situation, right? Yeah. Part of that comes with anger. You know, when this happened to my grandson, I was driving up to the hospital to meet them while he was in surgery, and I was screaming in the car. I was screaming at God. I was angry. I was hurt. And I said, okay, this isn't going to serve anyone, so I need to get through this. And I'm like, I'm going to be a victim, have a pity party, be upset about this, and not have any clarity or understanding of why this is happening to my little grandson. And then I just get to pack that up and move forward and try to find a gift in this whole mess, you know, which may not be for a while. And
being angry, but like not staying angry.
Right.
That's find that balance is like, okay, how much anger is the okay amount of anger? And it's like, you'll figure it out.
And I feel like part of that is the whole judgment thing. Like, you know, I understand what you're saying. Like, I've been on a million widow pages where there are some widowers that are 15 years in and they're just so sad and still not functioning, really. They haven't moved forward, have not been able to let go in any way, and are just so lost in that pain that they are just really staying in the anger and pain as almost like a tribute or a connection to their lost loved one. And, you know, I don't really want to judge that, but for me, I was looking at that and said, oh no, I cannot spend the time I've been offered on this earth in that kind of pain and loss and misdirection. But I did a lot of misdirected things right after my husband died, and it took me a while to sort it out and start making more positive steps. And so I would say, again, you just should probably extend a little bit more grace to yourself. Yeah, some people witness some rage. You have a lot to be angry about. The point is that you're not going to stay there.
Yeah, that's I think the key is not staying there. And in your own time, it's, you know, some people are able to bounce back from things within a certain period of time. And some people take longer, and it's sometimes you just wake up one day and you go, I'm not going to be angry anymore. I'm ready to not be angry anymore. And you can't force that. Someone can advise you, all the therapists in the world, all the support groups can say, stop being angry and start doing this. You just have to process it, right? And so it's like friends of mine that are going through divorces, you know, for a few years, we're all sitting there watching them being so absolutely miserable. And we're like, so leave. And it's like, you can say that, but someone will leave a bad situation in their own time. And when they do, they're ready. Full force, and then they move forward. So it is kind of accepting it in your own time. You can't force someone to accept it, but that moment, oh my gosh, it is such a moment of clarity when you accept your situation and go, okay, this is my life. here's what I'm going to do about it. And a mantra that I've carried with me since my late 20s, I heard it from a boss that I had, because I used to try to control everything around me. I just wanted it perfect. I wanted life how I want it to be. I want it how I want it, and that's how it's going to be. And he would always tell me, Christy, control what you can control. And I've always taken that two different ways. Number one, the flip side of it, if it's something you can't control, stop trying to control it and let it go. Move on. But on the other side, if there's a part of a situation that you're not happy with and you can do something about it, do something about it. Don't sit around and talk about that someone should do something about it. So it's two sides of it. And
I love that. That's some good wisdom for life.
Yeah. I mean, we all let it go. Well, but also do something about the thing you can do something about, and then let go what you can't. Like, it's not a just let it go. That to me is very dismissive. Let that go. It's also, and what can you do something about? Then there's some action associated with that, and then you can feel like you have some control. It gives you a bit of ownership back rather than just being like, let it go, which is, I mean, Buddhist detachment, all those things have been so healing for me to let a lot go. But the thing that keeps me feeling like a bit of like strength and paired with that letting, that peace, is, all right, I let that go. What can I do about something else or that same situation or just a nugget of that, right? And I didn't make this connection until last night, and I can't even recite it off the top of my head, but the Serenity Prayer. Grant me the power to, oh gosh.
Change the things.
Change the things I can.
Let go of what I can't. And
the wisdom to know the difference.
That's the biggest piece, right? Yeah.
It is, right? And it's like, wait a second. Many of us have said that over and over, be it in AA or Al-Anon meetings or in church or in something. But if you really break that down, it just became like words you say. Honestly, not until last night did I ever make that connection of the power of letting things go that you cannot control and then doing something about the things that you can. That is where you basically take back your power in your situation, where you feel like you have no control over what's happened to you, right? Those two sides of that coin get me through every single day of my life.
I love that. That is pearls of wisdom.
It is. It's gotten me through literally those things, accepting your circumstance.
Well,
and
I really,
and then doing something about it.
I really appreciate you. I appreciate that you put your story out there. I appreciate that there were so many little things that you talked about on your walk, because on your video, you're walking as you're talking. So many little things that you had said that we have talked about on this podcast, and I just thought you would be a perfect person. And I think that you showed that today, showing up and providing so many little pearls of wisdom in your journey. I really appreciate you allowing me to out to you, that you responded to the DM, and that we were able to have a phone conversation and help me have some understanding, because I really had no understanding of what to expect when my grandson came out of that second surgery, especially after he came out of the first one and it wasn't looking very promising. I always internally felt like it was going to be okay, but I couldn't figure out how that was going to be, because it just wasn't looking good. That process was really a long journey. It started on December 7th. He was in PICU for 14 days, and then he just got released. So it's been over 40 days that he was in the hospital. And, you know, he's a fighter. He's a trooper. He is aware of his challenges, and sometimes that can not be helpful, because he can kind of get down on himself, that he knows he's not 100%. He knows that whatever happened to him kind of changed him. And I don't really think he can fully comprehend what happened to him. You know, how can he? He's 10 years old. And he has processing issues. He has verbal processing issues. So it's going to be a long journey for him and our family. And I just really appreciate your willingness to have a conversation with me, just being a grandma who was concerned and have so much love for this young boy. And, oh, now I'm going to cry.
No, he's not alone. I felt so alone, and that's why I started making those videos. I didn't make them to help other people. I made them to make myself feel less alone. And in return, we all connect. You and I connected with each other. I think your grandson will be amazed when he finds out how many other kids have gone through this as well. It feels like he's the only one who's not, and you have to find one person so you just feel less alone.
Yeah, my daughter-in-law has found some incredible resources for young kids, and some nonprofit or something. I don't know if it's based here in Utah or just in the country, but they shipped him a box of little, like a t-shirt, and there's like an AVM society. So she's working on those things and finding resources her own way, you know, but we all get to figure it out for ourselves. Like, we all have a process, you know, when something like this happens to someone you love, you know. And my way was to get on TikTok and find people with real life stories that I could have some peace, that the journey may be long, but it will be productive.
Yeah. Make sure y'all take care of the caretakers, because you all need time and space to recover as much as he does. It's exhausting. But does he play video games at all?
He does. And it's been a great thing for him.
Please tell him if he hasn't figured this out already, but he was awarded a bonus round.
Oh, I love that. I'm gonna sit with him today.
That's a message he'll understand. Yeah.
Yep.
This is his bonus round. Every other human being on the planet gets one life. I would say we're a soul, and we're in this is one car to get us drive us around this planet, right? And like, imagine your car crashes and you can't get any other one. Like, he got a bonus car. He got a bonus round. He had a bonus life. So he got health points that no one else, hardly anyone else in the game gets. How is he going to spend those, right? And that's why, for me, I started running half blind, half marathons. I never run a half marathon in my life. I was scared to death to do it. And for the 1 year anniversary of losing my vision, I ran a half marathon. And I, at the risk of sounding to come, I freaking killed it. I was so happy. And I thought, well, I can do this. So I'm now doing one each year for the anniversary of my vision loss. I connected with one online. She had a stroke in Hawaii, and she's in her 30s, and she did a 10K. And I said, okay, well, you're ready for your half blind, half marathon. And she said, LOL, do it with me. And I was like, LOL, I'll get a plane ticket. And then in April, I flew out and we ran a half marathon. And
I love
did
that.
Another one. And I thought, okay, I don't know what to do with this, but this is what I can do with it. It'll benefit me. And then I still don't know what to do with it, but I still say if anyone that loses their vision or survives something like this and they need someone to run a race with, I'm there. I'll find a way to get out there. And so, Michelle, I told my son, who is 11, I said, hey, there's a kid your age that had the same thing happen to him that happened to my brain. I said, if we tell him, if he wants to run a 5K or any sort of race for his anniversary, would you run it with us? And he said, absolutely. Like, he just jumped up. He was so excited. So,
oh, wow. That's amazing.
I challenge the benefit of running. It increases the blood flow to that brain, like unlike most other activities. And my vision actually gets better while I'm running, because there's so much blood pumping to that area of my brain. The more he can not be sedentary and start moving, talk to his doctor, but get that heart rate up. If he just wants to go for a little light jog, anything will help him. It will make him better. It'll make him stronger. Running's the best thing I ever did for my vision and for my brain post-stroke. So you tell him I'm challenging him right now.
If he wants. I will pass the information on to my son and daughter-in-law. And I love that. And I love that you have found ways to connect with people in the real world and not be so alone in this journey.
No, there's too many people in this world. I'm getting messages from people from Indonesia, from Europe, from Ireland last week, someone else from Africa. And they're reaching out to me saying, I don't know anybody else. Please, you make me feel less alone. Thank you for your videos. And so it's just, people from Germany and Canada and Australia searching for a single person that can say, I know what you're going through. And so your grandson can know that there's at least one person out there, but millions actually, that know what he's going through, and he's not alone. And he got a bonus round, and I expect him to do something with it.
the power of human connection that really accelerates our resilience.
Well, thank you so much. I'm going to cry. I feel so emotional.
I'm
so grateful for you because it was really helpful to be able to talk about it with somebody who survived it. And it really meant a lot to me. So thank you for coming on and thank you for sharing with my listeners your story, and I hope that we help educate people. This is a rare disease. It's not very common, but one in 100,000 when there's how many billions of us on the planet?
There's a lot of people.
There's still a lot of people out there, and you're not alone. And there are people that are pulling for you and want to encourage you.
And whether it's this disease or whatever you're going through, that same lesson is true. You're not alone. Someone somewhere on the planet has been, felt, experienced, gone through what you have. And Christy, just thank you so much. I've written down so many notes of things you've said. I love how you talked about acceptance being peace. And then you said acceptance is clarity and that we can go ahead and fix what you can fix, but everything else, you just got to face it. And the quicker you can let yourself just accept that, the more powerfully you can move forward in a beautiful way. So thank you. I'm sure I'm not the only listener today that feels inspired, edified, and just motivated by your story because you're so positive and so resilient that it makes me think, okay, if she can do that, surely I can do what I need to do today. So thank you to you for sharing your story. Thank you to our listeners for tuning in with us each week. Thank you for being willing, those of you who've listened and then reached out to share with us. We always love to share listener stories. So if you're listening and have a story that you're willing to share, please contact us. You can find us on Facebook or Instagram. Just find the Relentlessly Resilient or Relentlessly Resilient podcast page. Click the little button. Schedule a phone call with Michelle to kind of go over what you might share and what that might look like on the air. And please find us on your favorite podcast platform. Wherever you are, like it, rate it, review it, share it with your friends. Let's continue that human connection that happens even through technology today.
And remember, whatever you do today, remember to be kind. You have no idea the struggles others are dealing with in their life. Have a great day.